It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy audio compendium podcast version of the weekly EasyDNS newsletter. Now, Len, you should sign up for the EasyDNS Access of Easy newsletter. I'm seeing here for the first time, this might be new. I don't know if it's new or not, that if you sign up with your email, you get the weekly briefing. Great. And if you ever want to use any of the EasyDNS services after you give your email, Mark will give you 10 bucks off. That's not bad. All you got to do is give your email. And if you ever decide to use something, you get the 10 bucks. If you don't decide to use it, well, you can listen to us and read the newsletter.
That's a bonus, you know, listening to us talk about random things. Not really random, but more cybersecurity stuff. And every week, there's always a bunch of doozies. But it's going to be no exception this week. How are you, buddy?
Pretty good. Good to see you. Good to see everyone listening, watching. Let's get right to it. The quote of the week last week for number 299 was, Bitcoin is a swarm of cyber hornets serving the goddess of wisdom, feeding on the fire of truth, exponentially growing ever smarter, faster, and stronger behind a wall of encrypted energy. That was by, Mike Saylor. The winner is Marco. Congrats, Marco. God bless. Way to go. This week's quote for number 300, Len. If you need a machine and don't buy it, then you will ultimately find that you have paid for it and don't have it. And you know the rules, post it in the comment section. No looking, no cheating. It's funny, I read that quote when I was reviewing the newsletter, and that applies to a lot of things. It applies to lawn maintenance, I think, more than most things. I think it applies to video and audio, like podcast production. Like, we obviously bought gear. I think we tried to put it off maybe as long as we could, but eventually just decided to go ahead and buy like quality audio stuff. That's a good quote. I really like that quote quite a bit. I think it's a quote you can live by, I think, in a lot of ways. What do you think?
Yes, less is more in many respects. And if you get by with less, definitely do it, because that's the more. And with the lawn equipment, I just thought about it. I finally used one piece of equipment that I inherited for the first time this year that I've had for 7-8 years. And I haven't had any.
What was it?
Something to trim the hedges. It was
they call those hedge trimmers.
Hedge trimmer. Electronic one. But it was for a tree that was growing, and it was just a baby tree we planted years ago. Finally, we got to use it to trim it down. So
nice.
It was good. But anyways,
hey, glad to hear that. Let's get into it. We got lots of data breach and overreach, and like always here, got I think 5 stories to get to. Let's hop in.
Let's finally start with a ransomware that has a decent name, Moneybird.
Okay, hold on. We got to rate the name. Moneybird's pretty good. Sounds almost like someone who works with James Bond in one of the movies, right? So I'm going to give that 3.7 out of 5. What do you give it?
Yeah, also 3.5 I'll give it. It's decent. It's almost, it reminds me of a nickname for a AAA franchise. But anyways, let's move on. So Moneybird, it was created by Iranian threat actors, and it's been unleashed in the wild, and it's taking aim at some Israeli organizations. And Microsoft, they have done some digging here, and they have come to the conclusion that the entity behind all of this is the Iranian Ministry of Intelligence and Security. And the goons at that ministry, they're also behind an advanced persistent threat known as Muddy Water. You want to rate that name, Muddy Water? To me, that's pretty bad. I'll give it 2.
I'll throw a 2 there. I was going to say 2 as well. Okay.
Pretty bad. But Muddy Water, this has been running since December 2020, so it's been around for some time. And that is supposed to throw a wrench in the supply chain through a phishing campaign in the supply chain in Israel. That's what they're trying to achieve. But not only that, and according to the U.S.'s own Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Muddy Water has been targeting a range of government and private sector organizations across many sectors, including telecommunications, defense, local government, oil, and natural gas. But not just in Israel, it's everywhere: Asia, Africa, Europe, and North America, essentially most of the globe. And these attacks by Iran, well, it looks like they're going against the US and their allies, and it's going to continue to accelerate, especially as Iran gets more friendly with BRIC nations, namely China and Russia. And they might ramp up their cybercrime units, as Iran, they've been under the heels of the United States for decades, and they have an old score to settle. And this is one way to do that. So I'm expecting to see more and more of this originating from Iran against the U.S. and their allies. This could be really, really time-consuming and costly for the U.S. to defend. It's another war front they're going to have to defend, something which is kind of new. So who knows how this is going to play out, but this is something we're going to have to keep our eyes on.
Not surprising to see this originating from a place that's war-torn and maybe lacking in traditional warfare utilities. I mean, short of nuclear weapons, I guess, in Iran's case. But, you know, it's interesting, Len. One thing I hear a lot about, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because in the story here, there's talk about how Microsoft, you know, helped uncover the Muddy Water collab with another cluster of, you know, ransomware, and has done some work here in sort of the tracing of the origins of these things. One thing I kind of want to get your take on, and this is a little bit left field for you and me, but is there a chance, Len, that at some point the United States tries to nationalize one of these giant cybersecurity outfits? And Microsoft is obviously not a cybersecurity outfit, but, you know, some people would maybe make the case that they're already nationalized at the Apple, Microsoft, Google level. That may be true as well. But as these threats become more prevalent, and obviously we've seen recently stories in the United States about how a Russian cyber attack could take down the power grid, you know, is there a chance that we start to see really close, obvious, and transparent collaboration, you know, for lack of a better word? There's probably a more nefarious term I could use there, but transparent fits the bill as well. Collaboration between government and these agencies in the name of protecting critical United States infrastructure assets or Canadian infrastructure assets. Like, it seems to me that we're going that direction.
I think the cheaper route, given the fact that they're cash strapped at $31 trillion in debt, they're probably going to contract this out. That's the easier of the two. And this way there's less of a commitment. And then they could be more flexible with how they're moving. And they can issue multiple contracts to a variety of these companies, and whichever one it does best, they could continue working with them. So I think that's probably the more likely solution. I don't see them buying up or nationalizing any companies, given the fact that, well, they could do it. And they have the unlimited debt ceiling for the next little while. So maybe
the question is really like
Microsoft, right? Why not?
have they nationalized these things already in a way? That's the thing. I don't know if that's the right term, but you know what I'm saying, eh? Like the allegiance is very close as it is. It's like a symbiotic relationship between the government and Microsoft, for example.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Well, I would go look at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency of the United States, and I would look very closely to see what they're doing over there and which companies they're operating with and how they're doing business with them. That may give you an idea of what's going to happen and what they're doing right now. So that would be the telltale sign. Mm-hmm. How much information could you get out of them? How transparent they are?
No, zero. Zero.
Anyways, let's move on. And Pegasus, and we've discussed this before. It's a spyware that attacks mobile devices like iPhones and Androids. And an assistant professor, and I'm not even going to bother trying to pronounce his name, at the Yerevan State University in Armenia. Well, this guy got wind that his phone was infected with the Pegasus. And Pegasus was spawned from the labs of NGO Group, which is based out of Israel. Two Israeli stories in a row. Well, maybe they should start targeting something else. Maybe they should start targeting the Iranian Ministry of Intelligence and Security and start a full-fledged cyber war against them. But that's just my opinion. Well, back to the story. This assistant professor, he was speaking out against a conflict that was going on in Azerbaijan, and specifically in the area that was disputed territory between Azerbaijan and Armenia. And it's hard to defend against these type of attacks, these Pegasus type of attacks, and because they're zero click attacks, and these are a nasty bugger because it could collect passwords, location, it could read your texts, it could track your calls. So this thing is just nasty stuff. But it could also, on top of that, gain access to stuff like your camera and mic. But yeah. I just want to, I mean, without really going too deep in the story here, I'm just going to say what are things people can do to protect themselves against a Pegasus attack. Number one is always keep your software updated. We talk about this all the time. It's going to close a lot of holes out there, security holes. Don't install apps you don't need or to ones that really seem fishy. It's easy to say because the Google Store and the App Store, they do a pretty good job of vetting them. It's still not perfect, but they still do a good job. Sideloading apps, this more applies to Android. It's a good way to get Pegasus attack on your phone. So try not to do any sideloading of apps. Don't click on links that seem suspicious. Try to be more careful when clicking on stuff. But another thing is you could also employ full disk encryption or FDE on your phone. Some phones have the ability. I know my graphene version of Android has that ability and it's installed natively. So these are things you could do to protect yourself. So it's pretty sad that this guy, unfortunately, was the result or was impacted by a Pegasus attack. But he should try to be more diligent with using his phone. And this is a good example of what happens if you don't. If you are vocal and you piss the wrong people off, well, you're going to have something land on your phone that's going to steal some of your information.
Isn't the real lead for this story the following few lines here? On November 10th, 2021, this is the beginning of the article, by the way, an assistant professor at Yerevan State University in Armenia received a notification, received a notification from Apple on his phone. His device had been compromised by Pegasus, a sophisticated piece of spyware created by an Israeli NSO group, blah, blah, blah. Someone's got to explain to me here. You know, you went through the dangers of having this software put on your phone by someone who's targeting you. Maybe you're speaking out. It seems to me you got to be a pretty high value target to get this kind of activity on your phone. But isn't the bigger story Apple sending him a notification on his phone about the spyware? Is Apple monitoring the phone? How do they know that the spyware is there? What is the relationship between the spyware and Apple? That there's an inability on the part of Apple to protect the phone from the spyware, but an ability to notify the user via a push notification that the spyware is on the phone. There's nothing else in the story about this. I had to read the story, like just skimmed it a few times. There's nothing else in there about this. No one seems to be talking about this at all. You didn't even mention it. I thought you would catch that too. What's going on there? How did they see that and tell the guy, but they can't protect his phone from it? Someone's got to explain that to me. That seems like a bit of an alarming thing, don't you think?
Well, just to give you some heads up, I don't know how Apple is dealing with it. I know this is just really off-the-wall information that came out today, but apparently the Russian Federal Security Service, the FSB, they claim that the NSA can monitor persons of interest through backdoor vulnerabilities in Apple phones.
Apple responded to that. You saw that. Right?
They responded.
They've never put a backdoor in a phone. They've never let a government into a phone. It's never been done. It'll never be done, was their response. Whether you believe it or not.
Yeah. So
maybe they're nationalized. I don't know.
So if that's the case, if backdoor does exist that they're aware and NSA is aware, well, that maybe they're examining things that they should be and shouldn't be examining. I don't know. From my phone. That's why I have graphene on my phone. But man, I don't know what to say about that. That's odd that Apple would intervene. They're scanning things, I guess, more than they gotta be. Well, yeah. The phone is always listening and it's always scanning. You know, it's when you type something in, it remembers what you typed in, and it's probably doing a search what you're typing in and what it's all about as well. There's so much at play here. We're giving up so much information for the sake of convenience that we got to take a step back and realize what are we doing, and it's we got to take control of our privacy. But that's it for that one. Let's move on. We could talk about sanctions, and they've been imposed on four different organizations and one individual with links of supporting the North Korean government. And one of these organizations have links to the Lazarus Group. We've talked about the Lazarus Group before. They are a North Korean-run cybercrime organization. And it looks like these groups are responsible for generating revenue for North Korea. And North Korea is cash-strapped just like every other country out there, but they're hindered with the added negative that there's sanctions on them, so they cannot bring goods to market to make cash like any other country can do. So revenue generated, it's a very, very good thing and they're for them. And it looks like they're using virtual currency. And I guess they desperately need it because Rocket Man wants to pay his cable bills to watch the NBA playoffs. And this may be one way for him to do that. So some of the funds that they accumulated were used to purchase IT equipment. Not too much. It looks like in the range of $2 million. And in the grand scheme of things, that shouldn't be able to buy you all that much. But anyways, that equipment looks like it's going to be used to help advance their weapons and ballistic missile programs. Now, the question I have, and I just don't know because nothing is mentioned in this, what virtual currency are they using? Is it Bitcoin? Is it Monero? What is it? I'd love to know a little bit more about this. There has to be some forensics done on a blockchain and to give some information as to how they came to this conclusion that North Korea is behind all this. But yeah, interesting story that they're doing this. They're getting around sanctions and are using, well, virtual currencies in order to do that. So good for them.
Yeah. Also, how dare you take a shot at the NBA playoffs? The finals start tonight. So since I have nothing to add to that story, do you have a pick for the NBA finals? Heat versus Nuggets, Jimmy versus Nikola.
I like the Nuggets, and I can't name a single player. I know you just named two. I still can't name a single player in either of the two rosters. We'll go with the Denver.
Sure.
All right. So move on. The second week in a row, Joey, we have a LinkedIn story. And I'm going to say the name. Hopefully I pronounced it right. Is it Vivek
Ramaswamy? Vivek Ramaswamy. Ramaswamy, okay. Yeah. Vivek Ramaswamy.
Because my Tamil is pretty bad. Well, this gentleman, he's been at the Bitcoin conference and he's talking about his aspirations to become president of the United States. Well, he had his LinkedIn account locked because he did something against the rules of the platform. What did he do that was so heinous for them to lock out his account? Well, he posted three different videos which he shared. The first was back in February where he said that, quote, the CCP is playing the Biden administration like a Chinese mandolin, end quote. And the second video he posted, again back in February, was outlining his concerns about the dwindling oil production in the United States and that countries like Russia are picking up the slack and, of course, generating a lot of revenue as a result. And the third video he posted just a few weeks ago, he said on it, quote, the climate agenda is a lie. Fossil fuels are essential for human prosperity, end quote. But he wasn't locked out from his account forever. He was able to rattle cages. Given who he is, he was able to do this. And with enough resistance, they've eventually reinstated his account. And the people at LinkedIn, they quoted it was restricted in error. Interesting. Now, if this was a normal individual in society that didn't have the connection he has and could rattle the same cages, would the same outcome, would we receive the same type of outcome from this? I would think not. I think that this was not restricted in error. It was done purposely, but given who he is and he's a prominent individual, they decided to reinstate it. But LinkedIn, man, didn't we talk about, you were talking about more so how useless of a platform it is. It's kind of like the MySpace, isn't it? But I don't know. What are your thoughts on this story?
So two things. One, I totally agree with your final point there. And it's an important one that we've made before and we should make again. That if you or I posted anything like this about the climate change narrative, we would be for sure banned from LinkedIn, maybe fired from our jobs. I probably wouldn't get a seat, like a good seat at the next family dinner. I'd probably sit like the middle of the table somewhere with people who are left-handed so that I can't eat properly. And you know, it's not even a thought experiment at this point. We've seen it happen so many times that you could point to 10 or 12, you know, different people over the last 5-6 years that have had their accounts censored. Oh, I wanted to put a movie up. I asked about gender. I asked about climate. I asked about, you know, even something as simple as like claiming that Russia is winning the war against Ukraine seems to be a thing that might get you looked at, let's say, by any social media company, including Twitter, by the way. It looks like Twitter's having some problems with this as well in the last day or two. So that's one thing. Other thing I'll mention here, Vivek, I think, has drawn the ire of a lot of people in the traditional media space, and I would put LinkedIn in that category because, you know, you may not know this or you may know this, listener, viewer, and even you, Len. A lot of people think he was responsible for the termination of Don Lemon over at CNN.
I did not know that.
His last interview was his last prominent interview anyway was with Vivek, and Vivek really took him to the cleaners on race, on gender, on economics, and was unapologetic. Basically, you know, Don Lemon outed as kind of this low IQ, there's a French word I could use that I'm not going to because I don't want to swear on this program. But, you know, he's sort of a moron. And CNN fired him a couple of days later for, you know, maybe some kind of old harassment thing or whatever. You make of that what you will. But I think this guy is drawing the ire of a lot of people in the media. And, you know, on top of that, Len, you mentioned the Bitcoin conference there. RFK, obviously, there. Vivek there. Tulsi Gabbard was there. And there will be others in future Bitcoin conferences and other future conference settings who are, you know, 5 years removed from being basically unable to reach most of the population if the party doesn't sort of, you know, bless your candidacy. Now here we are. These people are the most popular candidates. No one can name anyone else running in the Democratic primary, if there even is anyone. No one can name anyone on the Republican side besides Trump, DeSantis, and Vivek. Is he running?
He threw his name in, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. So there you go, right? So there's all kinds of different ways to reach these people now. And I think you're going to find LinkedIn, Facebook, all these different companies starting to try and censor these people more and more and nip them in the bud as much as possible, so to speak. So it's not surprising.
Did you mention Kennedy? You mentioned RFK as one of the people?
Yeah.
RFK, Biden, and yeah.
You know what I mean? So like these guys couldn't reach the public a long time ago, and media companies didn't have to censor because there was no other options. But now there are, and so you're starting to see sort of where the allegiance lines are drawn. And this is really just a rehash of 2016. You remember when Trump ran, all the times people tried to get him deplatformed, banned, this, that, the other. Anyway, so interesting stuff. I hope Vivek gets his message out. I think he's a strong candidate. Whether you agree with all his policies or not, he puts people on the spot and makes them uncomfortable, and that's good for the discourse.
Joey, this last story is one we talked about on the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, number 114. I think that was the number, right? And this is with respect to the IRS CI. This is the Criminal Investigations Unit. And they're going to be going out and deploying four individuals. Well, they're going to be cyber attachés, and they're going to be stationing them throughout the globe in four different areas. And they're going to be sent abroad to fight peer-to-peer mixing, DeFi, and crypto crime.
What are they fighting it with? What kind of gear they got out there? Were they boxing gloves? It's going to be like that meme with the boxer, the 8-bit boxer, where he's like, I'm going to fight peer-to-peer transactions. And then you see him in the corner sitting on his chair with a water bottle. It says, damn, peer-to-peer transactions got hands. Like, that's how it's going to look.
These Magnum CIs, they're going to go to different parts of the globe. We're not going to be,
how long have you been sitting on that? You Bogota, just make that up?
Yeah, Bogota, Frankfurt, Sydney, Singapore, some very prominent locations in the globe. And this is a pilot program that's going to be running from June to September. So it may just end after September if they realize nothing pans out from all this. But now they have all this money that's going to be flowing because the debt ceiling is unlimited for the next little while. Maybe they'll station not 85,000 IRS agents abroad. Maybe that's one of their things. Anyways, this is a combat cybercrime, and it's going to be focusing on tax and financial crimes using cryptocurrency. And so stuff like decentralized finance, peer-to-peer payments, mixing services are all going to be under the eye of these individuals. How they're going to combat this, I don't know. Only four, it's going to be stationed throughout the globe. That's a lot of work they're going to have to do. Definitely they're not going to sleep. What is it going to be, like 1.5 billion people per person they're going to have to figure? How is this going to be done? Well, whatever. It's an interesting story, but it's going to be a big nothing burger in the end.
I love this stuff. This is like the best. It's like an acid test, right, for competency. No competent government, organization, whatever announce this with a straight face and be shaking hands and high-fiving over it. It's funny. We talked about, not to like do callbacks to the CBP, but you should be listening to that too if you listen to this, by the way. But one of the things we said was, you know, open source software is always a step ahead when it comes to this little game of cat and mouse. And Arc, this new layer two that's starting to take shape, you know, you're going to need more than four, you know, digital outposts or whatever these things are called all over the world trying to stop people from what? Meeting up at coffee shops and doing peer-to-peer transactions and doing coin mixing, finding partners for coin mixing. What is your plan for that? Also, I will just note that although we, you know, are partial to Bitcoin, Monero is impossible to trace. This doesn't matter how many outposts you have. It's impossible to trace. There are other trade-offs that come with that, but anonymity is basically bulletproof on that chain. And so I question the intention here. And I question the the expectation, I think, you know, what is the output that that these guys are hoping for by September? And maybe just to quote famous American poet Billy Joel Armstrong, you know, wake me up when September ends, buddy, because that's about the only thing I think most of us are going to be waiting for.
And these guys are going to get their positions mothballed, and they'll go back to the mainland to do whatever else they could do as IRS CIs. And
as maybe, can we get like a, remember the IRS video that came out of all those people like training in hand-to-hand combat, like some kind of cheap, can we get that for these guys too? Is that going to be available? Is there going to be like a guerrilla marketing campaign for these folks? We should try and get that. Can we tweet them? They have a Twitter.
You know what? They've actually named who's going to be going out there. If you go on the I forget which government. Yes. If you go, I forget which government website, they named the four individuals and they outlined their resumes. So you can find their their photos, superimpose their photo on that video. You can make it really authentic.
We gotta do it.
Just food for thought.
If anyone listening, watching does that, I will give you 50,000 sats. If you put the names and faces of these people on that old video,
so for those unaware,
sats in there for you.
One Bitcoin is 100 million sats equate one Bitcoin. So he's going to give you 50,000 sats. So that's the equation there. And one Bitcoin currently worth around 26,000, 27,000 US,
something like that. Yeah.
So you can figure out what you're going to make on it and all this. And yeah, one Bitcoin's one Bitcoin.
Take your time, make it good. Okay, we care about quality, not quantity or speed. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Number 300. Don't forget, sign up for this show wherever you get your podcasts. Sign up for the newsletter, accessofeasy.com, and we'll see you next week for number 301. Take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care and bye.